KBOO 244321, or click the red donate box in the mobile app, or mail your paper check to KBOO at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon 97214. And if you already are a member, thank you. Thank you to all the members and volunteers and staff at KBOO who keep us connected. Thanks to today's contributors to the Old Mole Variety Hour. Thanks to Joe Clement and Dennis Gravy for giving us a leftist analysis of A Charlie Brown Christmas. Thanks to Bill Resnick and Alexandra Holstrom Smith for their conversation about anti-oppressive holidays. Thanks to Malcolm Shabazz Hoover and Daniel Grady for sharing their experience with Black Futures Farm. And to Tim Rice and Desiree Helligers for production and coordination help. The Old Mole will be back next week with fresh radio product on eco-disasters in film, the Great Derangement, and Palestine.
Listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The Development and Events Committee meets on the third Monday of the month at 5:30 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
Don't know what to get your loved ones this season? Check out kboo.fm/merch and snag some KBOO swag to support community media in style. While you're shopping for gifts, you can make donations to help support KBOO's $75,000 goal for our Catalog of Connections year-end campaign. Now through December 31st.
Welcome to Leftist Focus. I'm Barbara Bernstein, your host for this weekly conversation about our place on the planet. Before we start, I want to remind you that we are in the midst of KBOO's year-end campaign, Catalog of Connections. KBOO is commercial-free, volunteer-powered radio made possible by people like you. Not only that, KBOO has trained thousands of people how to make radio, all for free, thanks to the support we receive from our members. So please show your support for this amazing community resource and help us reach our $75,000 goal before December 31st by making a contribution today, or better yet, become a monthly sustaining member. Just go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321, or please support the community station you're listening to right now. As we transition to a truly renewable world, two of the things we need less of are more and larger server farms and nuclear power reactors to feed them, electricity. But that is the plan that's being hatched by Microsoft, Amazon, and other tech giants. Amazon is eyeing Eastern Oregon as the home for giant server farms to expand their AI capabilities, and they want to provide these facilities with electricity generated by brand new nuclear reactors to be built on the Hanford Nuclear Reservation in Eastern Washington. Today we talk with Kelly Campbell, Policy Director for Columbia Riverkeeper, about why this is a very bad idea. Kelly, welcome back to Leftist Focus.
Thanks for having me, Barbara.
Well, it seems like it wasn't that long ago we were talking about this small modular nuclear reactor program that several entities have been eyeing to build at Hanford. And I feel like today we're coming back with a whole new take on just why this is so horrible. Because when we were talking last time, I don't think we were imagining those small nuclear modular reactors feeding server farms. So today, this is beginning launching a new campaign, which is to stop AI. So let's kind of look at the intersection of these two, I think, major evils and what we're facing as we are actually trying to tamp down our energy usage.
Yeah, I think, you know, nuclear is something that comes and goes and comes and goes and comes and goes, but doesn't really get built very often. And so this is one of those times, again, when perhaps there are new plans out there. If you have a Google alert like I do, you see stories every day touting how wonderful nuclear is, and now, you know, how it's going to allow us to have infinite AI and all these server farms for data centers. And really, it's still something that really hasn't been built. I think people are surprised to hear that. But the only SMRs or small modular nuclear reactors in the world, there's one in Russia, there's two in China, and they're all underperforming. And so there's a kind of nexus right now between big tech pointing at nuclear and saying, oh, this is, you know, we're going to invest in this, quote, clean energy. And we can talk about why it's really not clean later. But saying that, you know, we're investing in clean energy, which is really, if they are to be built, they're at least 15 years away. Meanwhile, they can power their data centers and their AI with fracked gas, with fossil fuels, by, you know, taking the renewables that we need to keep the lights on. And this has kind of added a whole nother level to the dilemma around stopping small modular nuclear reactors, which really aren't the answer for the climate, but you know, seem to be big tech's answer right now for why they should get to keep doing whatever they want to do. And point to nuclear in the future.
Well, one of the things I see that nuclear power and AI have in common is that they are overhyped and really way underproducing, and that neither one has any track record of actually doing what its proponents claim it can do.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's hard to know here whether, you know, who's the fool. Is it are the nuclear companies being fooled by the tech companies, or the tech companies being fooled by the nuclear companies? Or are they trying to fool all of us by pointing to this, making money while not even building the things, and meanwhile, you know, sucking up all the energy for these things we never really agreed to? I don't know that I ever really agreed to having AI on my computer and on my phone. I don't know that I would agree to it if I knew how much energy it was taking versus just a regular search. So it's interesting, too. I've been to a number of clean energy conferences and seen clean energy conferences in the Pacific Northwest. Oh, suddenly they're all being sponsored by Amazon and Google. That's who's buying lunch today. You know, even one where you didn't even know that until you got there. And the Amazon and Google people are in the room. And so they're kind of inserting themselves in this, quote, you know, clean energy movement as, you know, just being part of what we have to do. And I think it's really worth taking a step back and saying, wait a second, did we ask for this? Do we want this? Could they be focusing their research and their energy on how to use less energy to serve these data centers? You know, you think about back when computers were like a giant, you know, building was a computer, and now we all carry around something in our pocket that's more powerful than that. And I wonder, you know, are there other ways to solve the problem of data centers and AI using all this energy? Can they perhaps find ways to be more energy efficient?
Well, I think that both AI and nuclear power are solutions in search of a problem, basically. That in all these false solutions that are being proposed for staving off climate chaos or things like how to produce more renewable energy, that we are looking at the problem is not that we don't have enough power to supply the AI servers. The problem is, do we really need the AI servers? And then looking at the unholy alliance between the nuclear power industry and big tech, and looking at what do they have? What are they giving each other? And it makes me think about all the strange people that are accumulating around Donald Trump and all these weird agendas that we're seeing. And big tech is right there.
They just all gave $1 million to his fund, right? So they're right there along with him. Yeah, I think that it's an interesting conundrum because they seem to be able to just decide to do this. And again, we're talking 15 years away from actually building anything, right? And it's interesting to me that they're, you know, trying to build at Hanford, which is already a nuclear cleanup site. The idea of putting more nuclear reactors at Hanford, they're actually trying to build on the footprint of WOOPS reactors that were never built. And for people who don't know about WOOPS, I didn't grow up here, so I didn't know about WOOPS.
Let's talk about WOOPS for a moment, because that's a big lesson right there.
I love WOOPS. I mean, I love saying WOOPS, because so it was the Washington Public Power Supply System back in the 80s. They were going to build a bunch of nuclear reactors in Washington State, and only one got built, the Columbia Generating Station that is sited at Hanford, that is still supplying power, a light water reactor. And the other ones didn't, and it was, I think it was like a over $2 billion default on the project that Washington ratepayers were paying for a long time, if they're not still paying.
Actually, people in Canby, because it was there was a public power
consortium.
So, yeah. Right. So, which is one of the things, like public power in and of itself is not always good. They make really bad choices, and this was a really bad choice. Mm-hmm. But for some reason, I think because Canby has public power, that they were also into that consortium. And I think they're the only community in Oregon that's still paying it. And it's an exorbitant amount of money that the ratepayers were paying for. We're talking like over 30 years now, almost 40 years.
Yeah, and so whoops, so it, you know, can easily be pronounced whoops, which is just fantastic since that's kind of what happened.
They did change the name.
They changed their name. I was just looking, they spent $300,000 to change their name in the 90s to Energy Northwest. Again, doesn't have the word nuclear in it. I always find that interesting that a lot of these nuclear, like, I always say small modular nuclear reactors, but a lot of the lingo is SMR and, you know, Columbia Generating Station. I feel like it's a problem if you're not proud to say what you're actually doing at a facility, right? If you're not willing to say the word nuclear, there's a reason. Why don't you want to say that? It's because it gives people qualms, because people have questions, and rightly so.
Well, one of the interesting pieces about this puzzle about Amazon pushing for these small nuclear modular reactors to be built across the Columbia River in Washington State is that they can't build the reactors in Oregon because there's been a moratorium on any new nukes since 1980. Yep. And it's there's going to be measures in the legislature this session. Every 2 years, there's measures to try to rescind that moratorium, and every 2 years, it's defeated. So it's interesting to see how Oregon has protected itself so far from any more nuclear building, but we're right across the river from Washington State.
Right, and we have protected ourselves so far. I will say I was down in Salem last week for Ledge Days, and it looks like there is going to be a proposal around the moratorium. They're trying to look for some sort of loophole to be able to build while still have a moratorium. I don't know how that works, because moratorium to me would mean
moratorium.
Right, like you don't have exceptions to it, or it's not a moratorium. So I haven't seen the bill language yet, but we do know that Umatilla County commissioners voted to spend $30,000 on a lobbyist to try to make it so they can build nuclear reactors in Umatilla County. I don't know what that would look like. I don't know what design they're talking about. I don't know what size. But it seems to me we have a moratorium that says until there's a national waste repository and a vote of the people, we won't build new nuclear in Oregon. And it's been almost 45 years, and there's still no national waste repository. We're not any closer to it. So the idea of trying to overturn the moratorium or trying to come up with some sort of loophole in the moratorium is, you know, just should be a non-starter. However, you know, when Amazon and Microsoft and all these big tech companies suddenly have all this money to throw on, that makes me nervous that this year there might be a more serious attempt. And I think it's going to be incumbent on us to make sure that our legislators are educated about the state of nuclear and understanding why, you know, there's no reason to change the moratorium that we have.
Well, my understanding was, I think in the last session, there were a couple of proposals, and one of them was for the counties to be able to make the decision and supersede the state.
Right, which is kind of nuts. I mean, you don't see that happening with other technologies. And again, this is, it's a very complicated technology. It's something that you want to take very seriously. You want to have multiple safeguards. It's brand new. So the idea of, you know, counties supervising that kind of thing rather than having, you know, the state and federal. And again, you know, what does that mean if you live in the next door county, if you live in the downwind county, right? That you wouldn't have any say in that. So it just doesn't make any sense to license it that way. And I would imagine legislators would also see the folly in doing that kind of scenario.
Well, a headline that really rang my bell, I guess it was a couple months ago now, was seeing that Microsoft is in the process of resuscitating Three Mile Island. Now, I didn't realize that only one of the reactors in Three Mile Island was damaged so badly that it'll never be started again, but the other one supposedly is just fine. And I thought, Three Mile Island, I mean, that is up there with Chernobyl and Fukushima as the big lessons to be learned of the dangers of nuclear power. So what's your thoughts on the fact that that can be a headline without a lot of critiquing going on about it?
I mean, I think it speaks to, you know, just the folly of nuclear and the way that these big tech companies are sort of glomming onto it as the solution, right? Like, they're looking for a magic bullet kind of solution. And, you know, nuclear, whether it's reviving old plants or, you know, building these new ones, is really not part of the solution to climate change. I mean, climate change is a hard, hard issue. We don't have easy answers. Anytime someone's got an easy answer for it, they're probably selling you something, right? So I think looking at it in a really clear-headed way and understanding that these nuclear plans are not something, I think restarting the old ones is also a long ways off, if that were to even happen. And then you got to kind of wonder, like, some of these, you know, they were closed for a reason. And, you know, even with the Columbia Generating Station, there's things that go wrong. These old ones, when they need to be taken offline, sometimes they're taken offline longer than expected. So they're not really meeting, the needs that people think they're going to meet in terms of, like, being reliable energy. And as they age, can't imagine that they're going to be more reliable.
And you're listening to Lucas Focus on KBOO Community Radio in Portland, Oregon. Seattle stations KBFG, LPFM, and KODX, LPFM. KMUN and KCBB in Astoria, Oregon. KCEI in Taos, New Mexico. Radio Free Moscow in Idaho and Radio Tacoma. And today we're talking with Kelly Campbell, Policy Director for Columbia Riverkeeper, about the unholy alliance of big tech and big nukes. And I want to remind you that we're in the midst of KBOO's year-end campaign, Catalog of Connections, where we're giving the gift of grassroots community media. Help us reach our goal of $75,000 before December 31st. You can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321, or you can mail a check to 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97214. Thanks for supporting community-powered radio. And Kelly, you made a mention that it's time for you to support community
radio.
That's
right, Barbara. I'm here to admit that I have not made my annual donation to KBOO yet, so I will be doing that as soon as we get off the air, probably by text. How do you do that? By
text? So again, if the text is, you text KBOO to 44321.
I will be doing that, and I hope that other listeners out there will join me.
Great. Thank you, Kelly. And thank you, listeners who have already joined the end of the year campaign. And for those of you who are like Kelly, you just haven't gotten around to it yet, when Kelly leaves the station, you can start your process.
Today's the day. Get it over with. You'll feel better.
And then have the rest of the month to just relax.
That's right.
I name the show every week, and the name for this show is Nukes for Needless Energy. And it's this thing that I've been on all week, that I've been thinking about how, as bad as nuclear reactors are and resuscitating them, the fact that they're being connected now with the need to generate enough power to run all these servers that big tech have, particularly for AI, I think the main thing is probably AI, that there's something really unseeming about this and something really dangerous. So I wanted to talk a little bit about all this energy that they claim needs to be generated and how much do we really need it?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. I mean, they're talking about, 30% more energy needed in the Pacific Northwest in the next 10 years because of data centers and AI. So I guess, again, it's like, who gets to make those decisions and why and how? The other piece of these data centers, too, and I don't know much about this yet, I'm just starting to look into it, but is there water usage? How many jobs are they really creating? They talk about creating a lot of jobs, but then the ones that do exist seem to have very few jobs.
Like 18 people, I think.
Right, yeah. So, I think being really circumspect about, and, they've been getting tax breaks to do them in certain areas. Really looking at, I guess, who controls what we're building in our region and who has a say, because it suddenly has become, I don't feel like it's my problem that big tech suddenly has decided it needs, so much more power. I don't feel like that is something that we should have to solve that problem. That's something that they, need to be able to come up with solutions for. And again, looking at nuclear, that's a 15 plus year out solution, if it's a solution at all, which I don't think it would be. But it just allows them to keep going and to keep pushing. I don't know, is this AI stuff a bubble? Is it really going to help us? I'm not super convinced. Mostly what I'm trying to do is to get AI, to stop being the first search item on my search bar so that I can, look for things from reputable sources.
I mean, that's a big thing, because so much of the information that's coming out of AI is really specious. I mean, I had read about this. If you run Google as a browser, Not always, and I think maybe one of my computers, I've somehow trained it not to do this, but often the first thing that comes up is this AI, and they have a thing on the far right corner saying this is experimental and blah, blah, blah. It's full of really bad information. And I had read that people have done searches for medical questions, and the answers that this AI-generated stuff comes up with would kill you. I mean, it's that serious. In some of the AI searches that I've looked at for my own not-so-life-and-death issues, I found that the information was really out, like 20, 25 years out of date, or just totally irrelevant, or sometimes it's just gobbledygook. So one of the things that really concerns me about AI is it's another, and I call these chimeras, they're these phantasmagorical creatures that are supposed to be so wonderful, and in fact, they are just an illusion. And that AI is, in a really big way, one of the biggest chimeras facing us, because it just has not proven itself at all yet. I was reading an article the other day about how actually it's probably not going to be capable of doing all this advanced ways of helping in terms of medical research and extending life and moving to other planets and all the other things, both necessary and very unnecessary, that it's being touted to do, that it doesn't have that capability, and it probably could not physically have that capability. So it's just a lot of garbage that we're being sold, and it's, I think, because people are making a vast profit off of it.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think it's Facebook's motto, or it was, that was move fast and break things. And so that might work for tech companies. But when you think about a nuclear power plant, like, move fast and break things is the absolute opposite of what you want to be doing, right? So this is, you've kind of got an industry coming in that has a very different attitude about how to work, how to make things work, than what is necessary. Like, if you are serious about trying to build nuclear in the safest way possible, these people don't seem to have that attitude. And that's pretty frightening as well.
Well, actually, I think that the way that tech companies have broken things, they've broken democracy. I mean, they've broken some really critical aspects of our society. Mm-hmm. So I don't think there's anything good about moving fast and breaking things. Yeah. And that was the slogan of a 21-year-old Harvard dropout. So it wasn't somebody with a lot of maturity who came up with that idea.
But there's a reason they're called tech bros, right? I mean, there's kind of that attitude, that, you know, also that they know best, right? That they can come in and do these things. I also found it really interesting that, you know, right after Amazon, Microsoft, Google all announced that they're going nuclear, oh, then the next week the federal government announces $9 billion in, you know, nuclear spending grants that will probably, you know, go to these kind of huge corporations. So this is all planned. You know, this wasn't something that, it wasn't just serendipity that they all decided to announce it at the same time. And, you know, again, like, who should be making these decisions about whether we have nuclear or not? I don't think it should be Google and Amazon and Microsoft.
I think about, going back to the 80s when the moratorium against nuclear power got in place in Oregon, and a year after the Three Mile Island nuclear disaster, which was the first, well, I don't think it was actually the first nuclear disaster in the United States, but the first one that got publicized.
Church Rock, I forget what it's called, in the Southwest.
Yeah, there was something before that. And then there was a really bad one in England in like 1957, I think. But the 80s was a time when nuclear power just took a nosedive. And basically, a lot of nuclear power plants closed. No new ones were built until just a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
And it seemed like we had just put in the nuclear genie back in the bottle where it belonged, and maybe buried the bottle in a nuclear repository that we can't find.
We don't know how to have
the real one. We don't have, but we have this one. At least
the magic one.
Right. Yeah. And then all of a sudden it's back again. And I think that surprised me, because it's, again, well, maybe it's like the abortion rights fight. Mm. You think that you have you've won these fights, and reason has taken hold, and then you find that even the Biden administration, I mean, not with abortion, they're good about that, but in terms of some of these other very specious so-called climate solutions, that they're buying the same kind of hype that the right is buying.
Yeah, and really it was, you know, 10, 12 years ago, there was supposed to be this, quote, nuclear renaissance, and there was a lot of hype then, too. It feels very similar to this, honestly. There was a lot of hype about nuclear and how it's going to save everything, and then really, like you said, there were the two plants built in Georgia, both, like, way over budget, way beyond the time scale and costing ratepayers way more money. Like, that's all that came out of it. And I, you know, we're in another one of those periods of like this magical thinking around nuclear being you know, the solution to everything, and you know, and sort of allowing us to like keep doing, you know, keep growing, keep using more energy, keep doing whatever, because nuclear will be the answer. So it'll be interesting if we look back on this in, you know, 10 years and see what really came out of this. Were there actually small modulars built or not? How, if they were built, how did they perform? But you know, I think the real danger here is the distraction from really dealing with the hard question of how we best address climate chaos. And there's going to be multiple answers to that. But you know, I firmly believe one of them is not going to be, let's, you know, mine uranium on indigenous land to build nuclear reactors that then will produce more waste that we have no solution for. And it's interesting because whenever I write about this, I hear from mostly men or male sounding names that, you know, say the climate crisis is so severe. It is the issue of our time. We must do everything, and the everything includes nuclear.
Well, actually, Obama's administration said that. I mean, Al Gore said that. James Hansen, I was in a room with James Hansen where he was standing up and talking about how we needed nuclear energy because it was the only way to solve the energy problem. And then I think back to the 80s when the Bonneville Power Administration and Portland General Electric, before it was taken over by Enron, were all about conservation. Mm-hmm. And we're cutting back the projections of how much energy usage the Northwest was going to use. And I think maybe it was like 20-30% reduction that was projected in the next 10 years. And it did go way down.
Yes.
And now they're projecting that we need 30% more than we are using right now. So the question to me has to do with who is generating this need for energy and how can we look at that kind of boondoggle?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And I think, too, you know, the idea that nuclear is clean, if we can get into that for a minute, because they do talk about nuclear is clean. And unfortunately, you know, in statute in Oregon and Washington, nuclear is considered clean. But again, when you look back to where does it all start, it starts from uranium mining, which around the world is almost always on indigenous land. And we, on the Columbia River Keeper website, you can watch a webinar that we did recently with Leona Morgan, who's a Diné activist on this issue. There are thousands of open uranium mines on the Navajo Nation alone. It is a serious health issue for indigenous people. So we're starting from not clean, right? Then we're building these things. Takes quite a bit of greenhouse gases to actually build the things. So that's, you know, not helping. And then we're ending up with nuclear waste that, again, we don't know what to do with. We don't have a national repository. Now they're talking about consent-based siting, basically paying off communities to store nuclear waste.
What kind of consent is that?
I don't know. I mean, I think it's, you know, it's because they don't have any clue how to find a national repository that's actually safe. This is the, oh, we can build and then we can get communities to take nuclear waste. I find that is, from an environmental justice standpoint, extremely problematic, right? Who's going to take nuclear waste? Who is voluntarily going to do that? You know, they'll be promised all kinds of money for services that people should already have, not just because they're willing to accept nuclear waste into their area. And then, you know, for us, building on the Columbia River, just a non-starter. Like, we're already dealing with cleaning up Hanford. To build these at Hanford really is about the riskiest place you could think of, because if anything goes wrong with any of the facilities at Hanford, we may not be able to actually get in to safeguard other facilities that are there. So putting it at Hanford makes absolutely no sense. They're talking about building in the footprint of some of the WOOPS reactors that didn't get built, that's right near the Columbia Generating Station, which is the existing nuclear power plant there right now. There is a tritium plume underneath the parking lot where the employees park to go to work at the CGS, and so they can't actually get in to clean that up because there's an existing reactor on top of it. What happens when we put more reactors right next to it? So it's like, if you wanted to think of the worst place possible to put these reactors, it would be at Hanford on the Columbia River. And that's where they're talking about doing it.
And then to add to it, it's also in a seismic zone. And I think there's some earthquake faults underneath Hanford.
There's earthquake faults that they didn't know existed when the CGS was built. So there's that. There's also, wildfires, floods, like all kinds of possibilities out there that would, potentially impact new reactors. And again, the interaction with what already is going on out there in terms of, the vitrification plant, the different tank waste. There's just so much at Hanford. And it's a little bit, when people first looked at Hanford, it was considered a sacrifice zone, right? It was like, oh, here's this place, quote, in the middle of nowhere with, quote, nobody on it. The quote doesn't matter, right? And so that's why it was used to produce the plutonium for the bombing of Nagasaki and throughout the Cold War. We work a lot in solidarity with Yakima Nation, and it's been really wonderful to hear their perspectives on Hanford as a sacred place, as a beautiful place, as a place that really matters, and to really see that, we shouldn't have sacrifice zones, that if we're going to base ourselves off technology that's going to require us to sacrifice places and people, you're starting with the wrong question, right, or the wrong idea. So I think, looking at Hanford as a place that, needs to be cleaned up to the point where tribes can use it for gathering and hunting, it needs to be cleaned up to the point where people can use it for recreation, and putting small modular reactors at Hanford just goes completely in the wrong direction.
And I just want to add that small modular nuclear reactors aren't that small. It makes it sound like it's something that you could put on this table. But.
Right. Yeah. No, those are the micro reactors. And people will say, and it is true, we do have research reactors at Oregon State University and Reed College. That's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about, these larger reactors that, are extremely problematic.
And you're listening to Locus Focus on KBOO Community Radio in Portland, Oregon, Seattle stations KBFG LPFM and KODX LPFM, KMUN and KCBB in Astoria, Oregon, KCEI in Taos, New Mexico, Radio Free Moscow in Idaho, and Radio Tacoma. And today we're talking with Kelly Campbell, Policy Director for Columbia Riverkeeper, about the unholy alliance of big tech and big newts. And now in the midst of KBOO's year-end campaign, Catalog of Connections, we are giving the gift of grassroots community media, and you can also help by donating to kbo.fm/give. Your contribution goes towards independent, cutting-edge, unique programming by the people for the people. Help us meet our $75,000 goal by going to kbo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321, or you can mail a check to KBOOFM, 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97214, and thanks for supporting community-powered radio. I want to get back to this whole question of the energy that we need and the energy that we don't need. And I think that a lot of us, I mean, you're sitting here with your wonderful MacBook Air supercomputer that's like the size you can almost put it in your pocket. And we have our phones in our pockets, and we're just so used to this computer world that's, that's totally portable and totally expansive. But every time you do a Google search, do we think about how much electricity it's taking for that Google search? And do we think about those servers? And I had the opportunity in 2007 to visit the Googleplex, which is Google's headquarters in Silicon Valley. And Google was just pretty small companies back then, and they were really focusing on solarizing their energy source. And they had put solar panels up on all the rooftops and all the parking structures and everywhere. And they had big fat grant from the state of California to do it, but they were promoting themselves as this really clean, renewable energy company. And we got a tour of their server area, and it was a room kind of like, had a bunch of computers. The guy was giving the tour saying, we've outgrown this room. We have to like actually get a little bit bigger. Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know that anybody who was on that tour would imagine the server farm that Google later built at the Dalles, which has sucked up lots and lots of water and electricity from the community and been giving
tech. They want to build more
bricks,
there, too.
And they want to expand it. Not to mention how many server farms Google and other big tech places are wanting to build all around Eastern Oregon. I guess Prineville has become another big server center. Mm-hmm. And so thinking about what this land used to be, I think in the Dalles, where the original Google plant was put, I think it used to be the aluminum plant.
I think you're right.
Yeah, that went out of business in the 70s. Mm-hmm. So it was basically an industrialized plant right on the river, but it wasn't like farmland. But in around Prineville and in Umatilla County and Morrill County. There's a lot of farmland there, and this is a lot of really special habitat. So I want to kind of go back into thinking about what do we do with this need that's being generated, and actually Jeff Bezos, because of course that's Amazon, and he's the one who's been trying to help us to want more for the last 20 years, that we want things we never even knew we needed. And we don't need.
And we want them really fast.
And we need them to get them yesterday by Einstein Express. Mm-hmm. And how that's generating the same kind of mentality and the same kind of imbalance of this energy need.
Yeah, I guess I want to go back for a second to the idea, you know, I don't think it's me watching cat videos that's the problem, right?
Stop watching those cat videos.
I know, I can't stop. But I think, you know, in the same way that companies put recycling on individuals, right? Like you're a good or a bad person if you do or don't recycle or fantasy recycle stuff that's not recyclable. But really putting the onus, like that was a mistake. Like we should be putting the onus back on the corporation that wants to do the new thing to figure it out, right? And not have it be like, oh, I shouldn't use, you know, AI to grammar correct my essay, which I actually haven't done. But I know people who do. I know people who use, you know, who are using AI to write things, who are experimenting with it. And, you know, that's fine.
I'm not sure about that, actually. My dog plays with this other dog in the neighborhood, and the other dog's owners are these people in their 30s, and it's been very interesting getting to know this young couple and their baby. And I was mentioning how I've started working on the transcript for the documentary I'm working on, which is real incredible drudge work, and I'm going to go home and do it this afternoon. I'm not looking forward to it. And so my friend said, well, can't you use AI? And I said, you know, I did try AI a couple of years ago to do transcriptions, and it was total gobbledygook. I had to, like, totally transcribe it myself. AI does not work for transcriptions, at least especially for the multi-voice issues like a documentary. And to me, it's like, as much as I don't like to transcribe, I would rather do it myself than to rely on AI, which I don't trust, because there's still a thing with AI. I think there's so many unknowns about it that it isn't trustworthy.
Yeah, I think it'll be interesting to see what comes of it. I mean, I've seen the hype, and I've seen people talking about that it's a bubble and it's going to burst. So I can't predict that, and I'm not really studying AI. But what I do know is, you know, building small modular nuclear reactors to power AI to power anything is a problem. And the fact that it's now being pushed because of AI, it's sort of a good excuse, right, to say like, oh, we need more power because of this, rather than looking at energy efficiency, looking at distributed resources, looking at, again, going back to these corporations and telling them, like, you figure it out. If you want, you know, you want to provide these services, you want to build these things, like, you figure it out, and come back with some real solutions, and not ones that involve radioactive waste. I mean, that just seems like a complete non-starter. I think if you asked most people, you know, would you like to have radioactive waste in your backyard, or, you know, no, people are going to say no. So this is not, you know, again, it's a nuclear fantasy. We've been through this before, these nuclear fantasy lands. I want to talk a little bit about some of the actual technologies that we're talking about. So like X Energy's design that Amazon and Energy Northwest and X Energy are proposing to build uses a special type of, it's called HALEU fuel. TRISO, which is like pebbles, it's making the fuel in a different way than we've done before.
It's not the fuel rods that we're familiar with.
Yeah, this time it's pebbles, and they're like the size of a cue ball, so you can picture that. But people like Ed Lyman at Union of Concerned Scientists have raised the issue of this uranium is enriched up to like 19%, and we used to say like anything over 20% is for nuclear weapons. So there's real concern among the scientific community that enriching uranium to this level actually makes it much easier to be used for nuclear weapons proliferation.
Let's go back for a second, because people might not know what enriching uranium means. So let's talk.
Oh my gosh!
Couple different isotopes of uranium. So let's talk about that.
Okay. I'm not going to talk about that because I'm not an expert in that. We have other experts and staff who could talk about that better than I could.
The common isotope is uranium-238,
yes,
which is not that radioactive. Mm-hmm. But then there are other isotopes. 235, I think, is a really radioactive one. And that when they, my understanding, when you enrich from radium, you're getting rid of most of the 238 and gathering as much possible of the 235.
I think you're right. Yeah. And again, this is a new technology. This HALEU fuel hasn't really been made in the U.S., and this TRISO fuel is a brand new form of that. But I guess the point I want to make is that there are serious concerns around nuclear weapons proliferation from building these things. So, again, that is something that, you know, the nuclear proponents try to say, like, oh, we have nothing to do with nuclear weapons. This is completely different technology. And in fact, it's not. They're inextricably linked. And so if you are concerned at all about nuclear weapons proliferation, concerned about nuclear war, this, again, it's not a responsible approach to generating more energy, because you're also adding that back to the mix. And that's something that, you know, with some of these like the light water reactors and things, that they use a much lower enriched uranium level. And so it's not as much of a concern as some of these, you know, new designs, including the ones that they're talking about building at Hanford.
Well, one of the things that concerns me so much, again, is this whole, the Amazon ethos of making you think you need things you don't need, mm-hmm. or wanting things that you don't even know to want. And that in order to get these things, then you have to use these energy sources that you don't know much about. You've forgotten about it because nuclear has not been an issue for 40 years.
Right.
So one of the things I wonder about is how to get people to remember the dangers of nuclear power. I mean, let's say, remember Chernobyl, remember Fukushima, remember Three Mile Island, remember that Trojan actually was shut down because there were cracks in the pipes, mm-hmm. which they hid. And then somebody leaked the x-rays that showed the cracks. And immediately after a ballot measure I'm not sure how many ballot measures that Lloyd Morbid
took
and others,
several.
It never passed. Mm-hmm. They always were defeated because PGE would just throw tons and tons of money to defeat these ballot measures to shut down Trojan. And there was one in 92. And then weeks later, it shut down because that's when the x-rays were leaked. Mm-hmm. So I think that somehow we have to remind people of what it was like to live in the nuclear age, and also when we were more worried about nuclear weapons, which we seem to have forgotten how serious that concern is too.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think one thing I think about too is the Zaporizhzhia nuclear power plant in Ukraine, and like, fingers crossed that hasn't, it's been used as a weapon of war, right? We don't know, you know, hundreds of years from now what's going to be going on in various places. In the last, quote, nuclear renaissance 10 or 15 years ago, they used to talk a lot about building in Africa, building in, communities around the world, that you could just plunk in a little small modular nuclear reactor. And you got to think about that now in terms of, you know, nuclear power plants being used as a weapon of war where they exist. So I think there's just so many reasons. We have so many other technologies and potential technologies coming down, around that are truly renewable, right? And there's a cost to everything. Of course, there's a cost to everything.
Now let's get into lithium mining.
Yeah, right. So there are different battery storage things that are coming online now that, you know, I think there's a lot of research to be done. And again, the more we're diverting, you know, billions of dollars into nuclear, that could be used, you know, for things like wind and solar, for things like different forms of storage, for things like grid enhancement, for things like energy efficiency, for things like distributed renewable energy. We have so many other options, geothermal. You know, there are so many things we could be looking at that are faster, that are cheaper, and that don't leave us with radioactive waste for thousands of years. So I think we need to be looking at these things more from an environmental justice standpoint, and be looking at, like, what are we potentially leaving for generations to come? And if people get into this sort of climate panic and think, oh, we got to do everything, you know, there's an opportunity cost to doing everything. There's an opportunity cost to nuclear, which has only proven to be more expensive than, you know, it set out to be. It was, you know, the most expensive way to boil water, right? So there are so many other options, and it all costs money. So the more we're putting into nuclear, the less we have for the things that are really going to help us address the climate crisis quickly.
And you're listening to Lucas Focus on KBOO Community Radio in Portland, Oregon. Sales stations KBFT UPF and KODX LPFM, KMUN and KCBB in Astoria, Oregon, KCEI in Taos, New Mexico, Radio Free Moscow in Idaho, and Radio Tacoma. And today we're talking with Kelly Campbell, Policy Director for Columbia Riverkeeper, about the unholy alliance of big tech and big nukes. And I want to take a moment to consider the important role that KBOO plays in our community. We provide thoughtful, challenging, and profound information in music and culture you won't hear anywhere else on the airwaves. Somehow, KBOO has kept this up for over 56 years, and you can help us continue to be the cheerful voice of social responsibility by contributing right now during KBOO's year-end campaign, Catalog of Connections. We're giving the gift of grassroots community media. Help us meet our $75,000 goal by going to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Or you can mail a check the old way to KBOOFM, 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97214. And thanks for supporting community-powered radio. Well, for the last part of the show, I kind of want to get back to this big picture of this unholy alliance between these two forces that are not for good, and to kind of look at how they reflect on each other. Because somehow it seems to me anybody who learns anything about the history of nuclear power will wonder why we would be, what does it say about another industry that wants to use nuclear power to increase its own ability to proliferate, and how good can that industry be?
Yeah, I mean, again, I feel like it is a magician's trick, right, where I see big tech holding out the shiny object in one hand for you to focus on, while meanwhile, with the other hand, you know, they're building data centers and powering them with fracked gas. So I think that there's, a bit of, it's just a charade, and it's something for them, because they have made these clean energy pledges, it helps them to, quote, look clean. If they can consider nuclear clean, and meanwhile, maybe not even build it. You know, a lot of times people have made money off of nuclear power plants that never get built.
How do they make money off of them?
Well, the different investors. So if you look at like investors from the NuScale model, so there is a company called NuScale that was spun out of Oregon State University, and they actually had they're furthest along in the NRC licensing process. They were kind of the darling of the nuclear industry. Of course, they can't build it in Oregon, so they were proposing to build in Idaho to power a consortium called UAMPS that was basically mostly Utah, but other states, small public power utility districts, and the proposal became, I think it was like 7 years behind schedule. It kept going up and up and up and up in price, until finally UAMPS looked at it and was like, this is nuts. Like, we don't, this is not, this doesn't make sense for our customers. And so they pulled out. And after they pulled out, the investors from NuScale are suing the company for basically false information, that they were feeding them all of these ideas about what was happening that actually wasn't happening. And so it's interesting, because this one, like, it crashed and burned. And I actually talked to somebody the other day who said they had a friend who works at NuScale who's like desperately seeking another job because the whole thing's falling apart. But if you look in the news, like, NuScale's trying to build in Poland or somewhere, so there's always this hype around nuclear, and there's different investment firms investing in things and making money off of the stock market from some of these that have gone public, and it's I don't know, in the end, like, do they actually even believe they're going to get built, or is this just something to show that they're, quote, clean by supporting it and not ever even really building them? I don't know.
That's a really tricky thing, though, is this whole label of being clean, and how the Democratic administrations, even more so, I think, than Republican administrations, have touted these, obviously, to me and to you and maybe a lot of our listeners, not clean energy sources like nuclear, for one. And then there's other, quote, so-called natural gas, fracked gas, has also been trying to tout itself as being clean energy.
I mean, part of it is you got to look at the whole life cycle, right? I mean, if you just say, you know, a nuclear power plant that is operating doesn't emit a lot of greenhouse gases,
that's
then you're
true.
Right. That is true. But when, especially with the word clean, like, we're not just talking about not carbon producing. You know, if you look at the whole life cycle, as the same with fracked gas, right? You look at the methane that's escaping from. So it's looking. If we don't look at the whole life cycle, then we're really fooling ourselves, or we're being fooled, right? And we need to be looking at solutions that, you know, from the origin point till, you know, the end, the decommissioning, whatever, that are less harmful, right? And coming about it, I guess, just with a different attitude, because if we're going to say we're going to swap nuclear waste for climate change, like, I mean, first of all, we're never going to get there with that. And second of all, we're just creating more problems for the future. And, you know, this is our moment, right? This is our moment to have these hard conversations and figure out, like, what are we going to do? Because we need to do it quickly. And we don't have the time, you know, even if nuclear was like, yeah, that's the solution, it would not come online fast enough to actually make a dent. And these small modular reactors, you know, they're not that big. They're not making, you know, it's not like a giant coal plant.
They're not even going to produce that much energy, you're saying.
Right. They're not going to produce that much energy necessarily. I mean, it's 300 megawatts for this first, you know, four pack that they want to try to do. So it's not nothing. But again, that's 15, 20 years out if it even happens.
And then the last issue for me is that we don't need this energy. And how do we get this message out to people? I guess I was talking to my friend yesterday about when I was raising this concern. I said, well, I want to stop AI. And she said, you know, good luck. And I see myself, you know, out on a hilltop waving this flag and stop AI. But I do feel like if people really knew the cost of AI and also knew how bogus it is and looked at what it's what kind of ripple effects it's having, maybe they would question, do I really need this? I mean, it's being sold the same way all the gadgets on Amazon are being sold. And it looks really exciting to some people, but most people don't know anything about it and don't recognize how much of it's really a shell game.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think I'll go back to something you said earlier in terms of, like, we haven't looked at nuclear in 40 years or whatever. You know, I think it's true, and I think it's, you know, incumbent on folks who were around. Like, I wasn't around here for WHOOPS. I wasn't involved in the 80s in you know, I was going to school. I was in elementary school, so I wasn't myself super involved in nuclear activism. But I think a lot of these stories, like the story of Trojan, the story of WHOOPS, now the story of NuScale, like, these are all stories that need to be told so that people can, you know, make their own decisions based on understanding the history. And I don't think that's history that a lot of folks like my age and younger know much about. So I think finding ways to engage on that. You know, the nuclear industry has Miss America, like Miss America from a couple years ago is a big nuclear proponent that was going around, you know, and there's Moms for Nuclear, which is, you know, women employed in the nuclear field talking about, you know, why they love nuclear, and guess what? I'm also a mom, you know? So I think there's definitely some stuff being put out there to younger generations. Now, whether or not people buy that, I mean, they both sound kind of silly to me, but making sure people understand that, you know, there is no magic bullet fix. Unfortunately, I wish there was. I wish nuclear was a magic bullet and it just totally worked and it didn't create any waste and it didn't use any uranium and it wasn't dangerous. That would be fantastic, but it's not true. And I think sometimes people cling to, you know, wanting an easy answer, wanting things to be okay. If we could just say, hey, let's drop everything and just build a bunch of nuclear power plants and everything will be okay, great. But it's not true. And the minute you start looking into it, you start realizing that it's just such a false solution on so many levels that it's not part of what we need to be spending our money and our resources on.
I mean, in my mind, it's the falsest of all the false solutions for climate change. I mean, the other ones are just very costly. And, well, there's a danger, too, like the idea of sequestering carbon dioxide and running it through pipelines, which would explode and have killed many people.
Right. Lots of bad ideas out there.
It's a lot of bad ideas. But nuclear is the worst. And I've had conversations with Jan Sears, your colleague at Columbia River Keeper, when we're out at Hanford. And I talk about with him how there's all these things that worry me. Zenith energy worries me. Fracked gas worries me. Climate chaos worries me. But when I'm out at Hanford, I think this is the thing that really keeps me up at night is Hanford.
Yeah.
And knowing that we're just 220 miles downstream from it.
Yeah.
And that people still, I think, do not know enough about Hanford to understand what a ticking time bomb it is and why you don't want to build any more nuclear reactors there. So how do we get the word out about that? And how do we use that as the base for moving forward for stopping AI?
Yeah. These are big questions, Barbara. I could say go to the Columbia Riverkeeper website. We do have some interesting resources. We did do this really fantastic webinar with Leona Morgan, the Diné activist I mentioned before, M.V. Ramana, a professor at University of British Columbia, who's just written a new book. I think it's called Nuclear is Not the Solution. Great book. Go out and get that for your holiday gift giving. And another book, the other person we had was Joshua Frank, who just wrote a book on Hanford, another great book to give to your friends and family. I don't know. I think getting the word out by educating folks, I think, I did not grow up in the Pacific Northwest. I didn't learn about Hanford until after I moved here.
Neither did I.
Right? And it's, the Western Hemisphere's most toxic radioactive cleanup site. Like, we should all know about that. So I think there's a lot of education to be done, and there's a lot... but I think we have the truth on our side. And once people look at the entire life cycle of nuclear, I think that can change their minds, that we're not just talking about, is it emitting greenhouse gases, but thinking about, like, what is this leaving behind for future generations? And really, that's the attitude we need to be looking at when we look at any of these technologies around climate, is how is this impacting, environmental justice communities, and what does this mean for the future?
Well, Kelly, I'm sure we're going to have you back on soon, because we're going to keep talking about this and we're going to figure out an answer. So stay tuned to Locus Focus, and we'll continue the struggle to make the community really aware of the dangers of nuclear power and how close we are to the impacts of it if these reactors are actually constructed. So thanks for being on, Kelly.
Thanks for having me.
We've been talking with Kelly Campbell, Policy Director for Columbia Riverkeeper, and you've been listening to Locus Focus on KBOO Community Radio in Portland, Oregon, Seattle stations KBFG, LPF, and KODX, LPFM, KMUN and KCBB in Astoria, Oregon, KCEI in Taos, New Mexico, Radio Free Moscow in Idaho, and Radio Tacoma. If you're just tuning in and you'd like to hear what you missed, or you want your friends or family to hear this show, you can listen to a podcast on our website, kboo.fm/locus-focus. To hear previous episodes of this show or any of our KBOO public affairs programming, go to kboo.fm or listen on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever you get your podcasts. I want to give special thanks to the KBOO staff and volunteers who continue to do an incredible job of making KBOO the important community resource that it is. And you can help us by becoming a member of KBOO or renewing your membership if you're already a member now during our year-end campaign, Catalog of Connections. We're independent, community-supported, grass-fed, volunteer-powered radio. Go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Or please support the community station you're listening to right now. And thanks for supporting community-powered radio. I'm Barbara Bernstein. Next week, we'll talk with Mitch Green, newly elected Portland City Councilor for District 4. My engineer is Ray Bodwell. We'll go out with Atomic Power by Mojo Nixon and Jello Biafra. Thanks for listening, and stay safe.
on. People creeping on.
You asked me to give you a chance
again
to try to save our romance. But every time I look the other way, you in the street are night and day. You just keep on,
keep on keeping on, keep on keeping on.
KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO